Hey, welcome back to the Amber May Show. I'm so glad you're here with me. I've been looking forward to this interview all week, and today joining me is Dr. Syed Haider, and he's an internal medicine doctor, and he is a wealth of information. I hope you really enjoy this episode. So please make sure you like, share, and subscribe because we're going to be talking about the things that happen to the doctors. So, like some of the behind the scenes look kind of like the system. What is the system creating? Are we able to have the marketplace of ideas, or are doctors just not allowed? They have to toe the line. I mean, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how the ability, the marketplace of ideas, if it's been stifled, how has that affected mankind overall? We're going to be talking about so many things, especially the result of COVID-19 vaccines. So it's going to be a really, really good show today. I hope you enjoy it. Please share it far and wide because what this physician has shared with us, I thought was a great deal of information and knowledge. So make sure you do that. And hey, visit the website, theambermayshow.com. I'm always looking for angel investors. I could really use your financial support. If you can donate $5, $10, $20, $100 at theambermayshow.com, there's a donate button right there. That'd be so helpful. And while you're on the Amber May Show website, make sure you check out the promo section because I've partnered with patriotic businesses to help save you money. They give you a discount and then they support the Amber May Show. So it's a win-win-win for everyone. We're supporting patriotic businesses. Speaking of patriotic businesses, this month we are doing a Mike Lindell Appreciation Month. He's gone through a lot, and so we want to send our support to him. So please go to mypillow.com/Amber. Use promo code Amber and you can save up to 66% off. They have sheets right now that are cheaper than Walmart, but way better quality than Walmart. Just pick up something. The things up there aren't very expensive. You can find something. If you have a pet that you love, there's a bed, there's sheets, towels, you name it, it's there. So it's Mike Lindell Appreciation Month. So check out the promo section. I have a great new website. It's not a new website, but I have a new section on my website and it's called Childhood Vaccines. If you go onto the resource tab, go down to the bottom and look at the childhood vaccine. It's just stuff that I've come up with on my own, things I've discovered and found, and I wanted to share that with you. So please take a look at that as well. So, join me on Telegram. I always talk more and offer more content on Telegram. You can find me at the Amber May Show on Telegram or Truth Social. You can find me Amber May or Frank Social Amber May. Well, coming up next, I have Dr. Haider right now. Like I told you, I'm so excited to be talking to Dr. Syed Haider today. Syed Haider, sorry for mispronouncing your name, because I'm trying to educate myself on the topic of vaccines. And we all know there's been so many dangers that around the COVID-19 vaccine. So we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about other things. So welcome so much to the program. I am so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think it's a really important topic. So, I'd like to thank you for just giving me a platform to spread the word here to as many people as possible.
It's absolutely my pleasure because you have been helping. You're an internal medicine doctor, as far as I understand it. You've been helping a lot of COVID patients, and you weren't just recommending go get that jab. So tell me what you've been doing in your practice to help the your patients that have come down with COVID.
Sure. So we've been, I've used off-label protocols for over a year and a half now. And I've seen over 7,000 patients. And seeing that many patients, you would have expected to see probably at least 50 to 100 hospitalizations and at least like 5 to 7 deaths, okay, minimum. And that would have been if it was just like representative of the population at large, right? Like some young people, some old people, some middle-aged people. But in fact, what we saw was, well, first of all, in fact, our population skewed very old. So you would have expected to see even more, severe disease and hospitalization and death than the averages that I just mentioned. But what we did see with off-label protocols like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and, things like that, steroid inhalers and stuff like that, we had, I think, 4 or 5 hospitalizations, and they all did fine. They all got out. And they had come in a little bit late. They started the protocols late, and we didn't see anyone die. No one died. Everyone recovered. And so really the, and this has played out time and time again. I mean, there's people, I know doctors in California, Arizona, and all around the world who've had similar experiences to me, when they use those protocols. So really on the ground, they seem to work great. And then you get this kind of, schizophrenic response from the FDA and the CDC that there's no data that these things work. I mean, it worked. There's studies, thousands of studies showing that these things worked. And then there's just the experience, the lived experience of people like me and a handful of other doctors. Unfortunately, there weren't that many. And so I went from being a hospital doctor to being like 100% full-time off-label COVID prescriber online because there were just so few people doing it. I couldn't believe it. There was a huge demand from people in the US and around the world for these off-label protocols, and very, very few doctors, you could count them, and they were probably in the hundreds, right? I mean, we have probably millions of physicians in America, and hundreds of them were willing to do this, maybe less than 1,000,
Was it because of the threat of losing their medical license? Was it because they believed in the CDC and the FDA? I mean, was it because the hospital threatened to fire them? What do you think were some of the reasons why these doctors, and you're right, I mean, it felt like a psychosis where it was, for me as a patient, it was scary. Who do I go to? Who can I trust? So what do you think were some of the factors involved in that?
I think the main thing was this, like, I think mainly it was that they just trusted the CDC and the FDA, and they bought in, they drank the Kool-Aid, they bought into this narrative that these things were dangerous or whatever, and they didn't do the work themselves to figure it out and go and look at the studies. And this is, time and again, patients would come to me and say, I took this stack of like studies to my doctor and he didn't have time to look at it. I
That
can
was
tell you, like,
me.
that there's no doctor who has time to read studies, right? It's kind of like, like when you're driving home from work, sometimes you'll get home after an hour-long drive. You don't even remember the whole drive, right? You're just on autopilot. Doctors have to go on autopilot because they can't like dig into every last thing. Even though this was a big deal, they did trust the FDA to do the work for them, right? And so this is kind of the baseline for most physicians. 99% of physicians are getting like they're getting it, they're getting kind of compressed from both ends, right? Like they are getting paid less every year by insurance companies and payers, and they're so they have to, and their bills are going up, and usually your lifestyle is getting, better and better every year, but you have to pay more and more for it. And so they have to like get patients, see more and more patients all the time in less time, right? They only have so many hours in a day, and so they have to just like speed things up, and keep things moving. And so they don't really have time. What they are able to do is just like the basic stuff, right? Like, what can I do to help, like, 90% of people come to see me? And then like the 10% that would require a lot of extra effort to like figure out, most physicians don't have that time, and the headspace for it. They just don't have it. The other thing, the other big element to this was that some people, I read a story from one physician. He actually prescribed ivermectin, but he was part of a big hospital system, and he got like a letter from the pharmacy. He got a letter from his medical board. He got a letter from, the state medical board, and also the hospital board and the hospital CEO, and everyone's telling him, "What are you doing? The CDC said this doesn't work." And so that acted as a, something to prevent physicians from doing this because they knew that they would lose their job. I went to a like a forum in Florida. There was a conference for COVID and off-label prescribing, and how do we do this? And we were there was a dinner there, and I was sitting next to an infectious disease doctor from the Villages in Florida, this huge retirement community, probably the biggest retirement community in the world. And he was telling me, I can't prescribe this stuff in my practice because I'll lose my job. And I was like, what are you doing here? And so the other story that I can tell is that a lot of patients came to me because they went to like an urgent care or something, and the doctor was like, sorry, I can't do anything, but here, call this guy. And they passed them like a slip of paper with my phone number on it. It's like,
Wow.
they themselves are probably coming to me, to get these prescriptions, and they're telling their patients to do it too. But their hands are tied. And some people made the leap, from like an employed practice where they couldn't make their own choices to a private practice. But making that leap, I mean, it's kind of a leap of faith because it doesn't, you don't just like, you can't just go from working to having your own practice and expect to be able to like go to be like to a full practice right away, right? So sometimes it may take a few months or a few years to really build up a private practice. So people are kind of trapped inside the life that they've created for themselves and inside the job that they have.
That's terrible. I love talking to you because you're giving us a different perspective on this whole COVID narrative thing. On one hand, I like the idea of you being a licensed practitioner. On the other hand, I hate it because now what the government has done has forced your hand or your colleague's hand to not do what you think is right for your patients, not what you know to be true in medicine, based on your life experience, things you've learned, things you've come across. It's this dictatorship. If you don't do this, you won't practice anymore. And we can look at physicians like Andy Wakefield. He was a gastroenterologist doctor. He started spreading the news and information about childhood vaccine safety, and they took his medical license away. And so we were seeing during the COVID-19 pandemic the threat of losing your medical license. So let's talk about that. How many years of schooling? How much debt goes into it? You finally are doing something you enjoy or think you're helping mankind. And then all of a sudden, that could be taken away in a blink of an eye because what you know to be true isn't what the government wants you to do. Can you talk to us about that for a little bit?
Yeah, so that is a fear, right? I worked for 10 years in hospital medicine, and this is seeing like really complicated patients who are close to death oftentimes. They're coming into the ER, and then they might go to the ICU or the step down unit or the regular floor, but a mix of very sick patients. And I did that for 10 years. I didn't have a single medical board complaint my entire career until the last year and a half. And then now I have like five medical board complaints, all for ivermectin, and like one of the medical boards sent me this ridiculous, narrative that like can you please explain why you're conducting illegal experiments on your patients? And I'm like, the way they're framing it is so dishonest, right? Like they know I'm not conducting experimental drug trials with ivermectin. They know that I'm just doing off-label prescribing, which is something that they and every other doctor does every day of their lives, right? Like 30, 40% of every outpatient prescription is off-label. And so they were spreading these false narratives and these false ideas and, painting things in the wrong light and saying, oh, it's like a horse drug. And it's like, well, like every horse drug is also a human drug, right? Like we don't create drugs especially for horses. There's just not big enough market for it. Every fish drug is also a human drug. Every cat drug is also a human drug. So, the same antibiotics we use for human beings, we use for horses and for fish and for cats and every other animal. So there's just not a big market or demand for creating, specific rhinoceros drugs, right? Like, we just use the human drugs.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey, so when you are a guest at the Amber Mae's house, you get luxury. And how you get luxury is I have this sleeping couch, the sleeper sofa, and you're telling me that's not luxury. It is when you put a MyPillow mattress topper on it. All my guests that have come over and stayed at my house have really enjoyed this sleeper sofa, which says a lot because they're getting to sleep on the MyPillow pillows, and you get the MyPillow mattress topper, and then it doesn't stop there with the luxury because when you shower at the Anna Mae Show's house, you get to have a MyPillow towel. I don't have the kids using it. I just let the adults have the luxury. So the adults get to use the MyPillow and they're phenomenal. And right now there's a massive sale going on with the MyPillow towels. So you should really put luxury into your home and live it every day like Amber May does every day. So I have a MyPillow mattress topper on my bed. I use the MyPillow sheets, the MyPillow towels, the MyPillow slippers. I live luxury and I don't have to pay the luxury price because MyPillow has promo code. So use my name, Amber, and save up to 66% off and you can live luxurious as well. Hey guys, I want to give you a pro tip to help keep your family healthy when everyone around you is coughing, sniffling, or sneezing, okay? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go first to drstellamd.com. When you're there, go ahead and grab some COVID bites. Also, get your ivermectin, set up your telemed appointment, and get your ivermectin. I'm going to give you a promo code to help you save some money and use promo code AmberMay, one word, and that'll help you save money. Now, here's your pro tip for you. You can use this on your entire family. The adult doses too. I've talked to a medical expert. They said cut it in half when you're dealing with children. So one tablet. What I do with my kids, because it's just too big of a pill for them, I get a blender. I put a pill in there. I fill it with water and like some flavoring. And then boom, I have them drink it before school. Pro tip, and what it has, and it's amazing. It has quercetin, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, all the therapeutics to help keep your body healthy and working at optimum health. Support your body's immune system when you use the COVID bites. They're amazing. So go to drstellamd.com, grab your COVID bites, get your ivermectin, use promo code AmberMay, and save some money. In today's world, you never know what's going to happen. I want to make sure you are prepared. So I want you to stock up on food right now. And the way you can do that, the easiest way to do that is go to theambermayshow.com. Look at the resources. You can have a full supply, full of food in your pantry, ready to go in case of a job loss or convoys, supply chain issues, business being shut down, war, whatever it is, you're prepared. So go to theambermayshow.com, click the resource tab, and get your food supply today. Do not wait, get it today. You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
So that was a false narrative. There were a lot of false narratives. And it was really, you know, quite dissatisfying, and you know, I was kind of shocked that we allowed this to happen. And what, and it's going further and further with every passing month. Now there's a bill in California that's on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. It's gone through the legislature. It's passed through the legislature. And what it'll do is it'll further limit the freedom of speech of physicians, you know, by writing this into law that if you they basically are saying in this bill that this is the truth, right? The truth is what the CDC and the FDA have said. You know, that is considered the God-given truth on COVID and the vaccines. Mm-hmm. And if you go against that, if you have a different opinion and you spread a different narrative in mainstream media, even, or in alternative media or on social media or to your patients directly, you will be liable to lose your license. And the problem here is that it's really like you had mentioned, it's like a autocratic kind of system where it's you know, this loss of freedom of speech is really at the heart of what the problem is, because humanity is a distributed superintelligence, okay? So everyone in their own head has some amount of intelligence, right? But the superintelligence that we have on this planet is when you have a free marketplace of ideas, mm-hmm, in between independently intelligent people. You know, one person says, you know, I think that this is what we should do for COVID, and somebody else has a different opinion, and you have, you know, 1,000, 1,000,000 different opinions, and mm-hmm, the free marketplace, right? Just like the Adam Smith's, you know, invisible hand in a regular marketplace, this free marketplace of ideas helps the best idea win. We don't have that anymore in medicine. No. We've lost it completely. So now we have like basically a communist system of healthcare, right?
Bingo. Where
government says this is correct and true. And what we've seen with that is that they obviously keep getting it wrong over and over again. I mean, why do we say flip-flop Fauci? Because he flips and he flops, and he's like, one day masks are, you know, worthless, and the next day they're, you know, the only thing that will help us get over this pandemic. You know, everything that we did in this pandemic was wrong, Oh, no. Okay. Every single government intervention was the absolute worst thing you could choose to do. And this is what happens. This is what people see in communist societies. The government tries to control the economy and control medicine and control everything and tell you what to do, what they think is best. They always get it wrong. No, small group of people will ever have the same intelligence that we have in a population of people, like billions of people, right? Billions of people will always be more intelligent than a handful of people,
Oh,
than
yeah.
one person, right? So.
So, like Dr. Fauci, as far as I understand, has never treated one single patient person. My understanding, and I could be wrong, I'm always, just want to throw that out there. I could be wrong, but my understanding of Dr. Fauci is he went from school to working for the federal government. I think you, as a doctor, have so much more intelligence, medically speaking, than him, because you've had different situations come up and you've had to work through those different situations with people. He can sit there all day, look at a computer screen, come up with some data and try and think of ways he can help mankind. But you can take that data and be like, that will never work. And I know it will never work because I've seen it in real life in action. So he might have the book knowledge, but you actually have the book knowledge plus the working knowledge. And not only that, if you read Robert F. Kennedy's book about Dr. Fauci, he had patents with the CDC had patents. And the CDC, I think the FDA does too, and the NIH, they had patents out there to patent pharmaceuticals. Now, to me, if a regulatory agency can patent pharmaceuticals, that will jeopardize their objectivity to say whether something is safe or not, because now there's a dollar amount attached to it. And what his book said is that these Dr. Fauci and his team that had the patents through Moderna were going to make $150,000 a year.
Each, yeah,
$150,000 a
yeah,
yes,
each, and
each.
ongoing royalties. And that's just like the tip of the iceberg because they have ongoing royalties from 20, 30 years of, drug development and patents, right? So, $150,000 a year doesn't sound like a lot of money, but you multiply by that t by 10 or 20 or 30, because they have multiple royalty streams coming in from, like, this is their business model. This is like, it's a business, right? And they are getting rich, they're becoming
Yes,
millionaires.
they
It's
are.
not just like $100,000
He
here or
makes
there.
way more than you do. He's a half a just his base salary is $500,000 from the taxpayers. Just a
Yeah.
$500,000. Maybe that's what you make. I don't know. I'm just gonna assume doctors don't make under $500,000. Maybe they do.
Yeah, he's the highest paid government official in terms of salary, but that's just, I mean, that's barely, anything compared to his net worth. It comes really from royalties. He gets, like you said, royalty payments for each drug that the NIH helps to develop and then passes off to their industry partners, like Moderna, to market it. And so they get ongoing royalty income, and he's been at this for decades, okay? So him and his, main deputies, they're all rich. They're getting rich off of these royalties. So certainly they have a horse in the race, right? Like, RFK Jr. goes back to like the AIDS epidemic, and they were doing the same exact thing back then, the exact same thing. It's kind of like a mafia model, really, right? Like they have control over the entire drug development pipeline from beginning to end, right? They have control over all of the independent investigators all around the country that are the people that run the trials for the pharmaceutical companies. If you step out of line, if you do something or say something that he doesn't like, you lose your career. Your career is finished. It's over. And so, yeah, I think this is the main thing that we have to change in America today is get rid of this autocratic rule from above. And I'm glad he's, planning to retire. To go back to what you said, I mean, from what I understand, he has said that he does see a few of his own patients, but I don't know that he saw anyone with COVID. And certainly, the problem is that it's true, what he says that, sometimes the science changes and we learn things, but there's no way one government official or organization can be keep abreast of like on the ground day-to-day changes, what we're seeing. We knew how to treat this virus within weeks of the virus being released, just based on like trial and error in the clinic at the bedside with the patient, right? If you want to kind of get a better sense of how that works, you can listen to some of there's this doctor out of South Africa, I forget his name. He was describing how his trial and error process, I mean, literally it just took a few days for at first he had like an idea of like what is going on in this person, what might help, right? With the pathology of this virus, right? And then he tries something, it doesn't work. He tries something else, and he finds something that works. And suddenly, patients are going from, getting sick and dying to no one being hospitalized, right? At all, right? And so when he was able to treat patients like in person, right, in this little clinic in the middle of nowhere in South Africa, and prevent them from being hospitalized. I mean, he did everything out of this little clinic in the middle of nowhere, and didn't send anyone to the hospital, and everyone was fine. And so, if you treated it early, there were multiple drug protocols that were found to be effective very, very soon, right? We did not have the time to wait for randomized, double-blind, randomized controlled trials like he kept calling for. And then when the pressure became so much to run these trials for like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, again, he did the same thing he did during the AIDS crisis, where he set up the trials to fail from the start. The way he set up the trials, right? And he did this for AIDS drugs also. It was the same exact thing back then in the 80s. The AIDS community was going through the same thing. They're like, we're dealing with a problem. These doctors on the ground are finding treatments that work. Why can't we be allowed to use these things, right? And why won't the insurance companies pay for them? And so he was like, oh, finally, he was like, fine, I'll run the trial. And he set it up to fail, right? So with hydroxychloroquine, and during the COVID pandemic, they designed the trial in such a way that they used toxic doses that ended up killing people. And they had like reasoning for it, but it was faulty reasoning. Okay. And the other problem with the trials was oftentimes that they didn't use multi-drug protocols, which is what was working on the ground. There was no one magic pill that I could give somebody to cure COVID, right? But if I gave them like five different things, they did great.
Yeah, like budesonide was a great one, then the ivermectin, vitamin D. I mean, there was a list. And you know what's so false about this whole thing? The only way the EUA could have existed is that it said there can't be any other treatment. So this misinformation comes in because there's these people like Dr. Fauci whose money is going to be affected. And he didn't care. He did not care about who he died. Obviously, he didn't care about in the medical trial that you just described. And he didn't care about the shot that was going to kill and maim people and permanently injure people for the rest of their life. He did not care because the only thing he cared about was how it was going to affect his bottom dollar. That's all he cared about, because in the VAERS report it just jumped so significantly high. There was this coach, or no, this pediatric doctor named Dr. Mahoney, I think, or Mahoney, and he states that 50% of the athletes in the Big Ten have cardiac scans that reveal early onset of myocarditis. Now, because Dr. Fauci doesn't care about the people and pushed something that was very toxic to the human body, we're seeing all kinds of devastation. Has this opened up a question to you about childhood vaccines?
Yeah, for sure. I just want to go back and like people like to villainize other people and like whole groups of people. And I think we have to like we can't know what's actually going on in somebody's mind. And what we're seeing happen in the world today doesn't require like villainy, right, to happen. This is human nature. And what I mean by that is that when you have an inherent bias, when your livelihood depends on believing a certain thing, you are much more likely to truly believe it, to be a true believer, right? So Fauci and his lieutenants and everyone in that, at the NIH, they may actually, most of them, if not all of them, may actually be true believers. Like they actually think they're doing the right thing. That's what's so it doesn't require them to know they're doing something wrong. And the reason it is wrong is because they are silencing everyone else who doesn't agree with them. So they're not allowing that free marketplace of ideas to just organically discover what is actually true and correct and the best course of action. So they are forcing what they believe on the entire world. And anytime that happens, right, like there's no way with something this complicated that one person can discover all of the truth and get everything right. It's just impossible. He will think he's right, okay? And maybe Fauci thinks and believes he's right with everything he's doing. And the smarter you are, the more easy it is to convince yourself of what you're doing, that what you're doing is right, even though you're inherently biased and you're oftentimes convincing yourself of something that's
Well,
false.
he thinks he's science, so there you go.
So there was recently a whistleblower at the CDC who said that basically everyone here has drunk the Kool-Aid, which means that they are true believers. They think that what they're doing is correct and right. They don't think what they're doing is wrong. They don't think they're killing people. Unfortunately, it looks like they are, if you look at the data that we have. And so, to get to the childhood vaccination question, first of all, it makes no sense to vaccinate kids, right? And maybe another aspect of this is the fear kind of porn that's been 24/7 ongoing, or was until the Ukraine war. Like, it was 24/7 pandemic fear porn for a year and a half, right? And people, like, their lizard brain, was just like overstimulated. This fear has disrupted their ability to think rationally. Okay. And so you'll see these people doing crazy things, right? Like wearing a mask in their car, driving down the highway with no one else in the car, right? Or they'll be wearing a mask outside and they'll be like jogging and they'll see you like half a mile away without a mask and they'll turn around and run back home. Okay.
Yes, that's right.
So these ridiculous things that make no sense at all. And so, part of it, what we're doing with the kids, I think may be explained by that, because the parents just like have this, like, they're living in a world that is not the real world. They're living in this world where their children are at tremendous risk and they have to decrease the risk. Where, in fact, in the real world where some of us live, children have zero risk. It's basically zero, right? Or it's so close to zero that it is zero, right? I mean, it's like, do you worry about taking your kid on a flight to go meet their grandparents on the other side of the world once a year? No one thinks twice about it, even though we know for a fact that some planes crash and some people die, right? In airliners, right? We never think twice about it. Do you think twice about going for a vacation in Florida and going to the beach and swimming? You don't think about like shark attacks, Sure, maybe there's one or two, or maybe 50, but in a world of 7 billion people, the likelihood you're going to get in a shark attack is so infinitesimally small. You don't think about getting hit by lightning every time it's thundering and you walk outside to your mailbox, right? Sure, it could happen, but this is kind of like what it was for the kids. I mean, it was like so unlikely. I mean, it was even more unlikely than getting hit by lightning, or getting into a shark attack situation, or crashing in an airplane. So no healthy kids died in America from the COVID pandemic, first of all. So right from the outset, it makes no sense to take any risk at all, right, with an untested medical product on a kid that has zero risk, right? Like, you are trying to decrease their already zero risk by, exposing them to some degree of risk. There must be some risk to this thing that hasn't been fully tested. And it, I mean, the adult trials were bad enough. The kid trials for the vaccines were just pure, utter garbage science. Okay. Just pure garbage. They studied, like, what did they say? Like, 40,000 people in the adult trials, like 20,000 in each arm. In the children's trial, it was like less than 5,000 kids. I mean, they knew they weren't going to reach statistical significance, and they didn't, because obviously they couldn't. I mean, kids are at even less risk than the adults that they had to study 40,000 of to try to find out if the vaccine was beneficial. If the kids are at, like, so much less risk than the adults, you're definitely not going to find any kids hospitalized or get really sick or die, right, in a children's trial. So you're not going to know whether this decreases their risk of getting hospitalized or dying or whatever. So there were just a lot of problems with the children's trial. Halfway through the children's Pfizer trial, they stopped it and they were like, yeah, it looks like, this was successful. And they dig into the data and they discover that it wasn't, that it didn't prove anything. They didn't have enough data. So then they're like, well, maybe if we give a third shot, and they restart the trial, even though they've already unblinded the trial, they've already given some of the placebo group the vaccine. Now they try to recruit more kids and salvage this already like junk trial that, should have just been like thrown in the dustbin, and they should have started over with, probably 500,000 kids if they wanted to prove anything. So anyway, so there were just so many problems with that, with the children's trials. And essentially, they're just like kind of like getting us used to this idea that you need less and less evidence to prove that something works, to the
That's
point
right.
where now the booster shots haven't even been tested on people. They've been tested on like less than 10 lab rats, okay, and mice, okay. I mean, not even like a million mice. I mean, how hard would it have been to, collect, 100,000 mice or something, right? It's easier to get 100,000 mice in a lab than it is to get 100,000 people. And yet they chose to, test this new booster on like, eight mice. Okay.
Right.
I mean, just how ridiculous are we going to be? And you know, this it's a new thing, right? Like, just because the technology has been supposedly tested and proven in one trial, if you stick something else into it, like if you stick a different bullet in the gun, it's going to have a different effect, right? And unfortunately, that's kind of like what these things are. These shots are more like, you know, they're like bullets and they're like guns, you know. And the really devastating, the damaging part of it is the spike protein. You're loading up this gun with a spike protein, and if the virus is like a handgun, the vaccine is more like a machine gun. Okay, the handgun, you know, maybe you get one bullet, and you know, or actually, it's more like you know, what is it? Like, one thing is buckshot, the other thing is like the thing that's not as bad as
Birdshot.
buckshot, birdshot. Okay, so the virus is like birdshot. It's like a superficial thing. The virus just comes in superficially, and your surface immune system stops it. It doesn't penetrate really deep into your organs and everything. Whereas the shot is more like buckshot. It penetrates into your organs everywhere, every organ, your brain, you know, your ovaries, you know, your heart, and the spike protein is digging into all of those places that it never reaches in a regular infection, okay? And it's causing inflammation. It's a human toxin. It's a neurotoxin. It's a DNA toxin. I mean, it's just it's I mean
It's
the
disrupting the reproductive system because especially getting, I know one man who is on who was on oh, what is that? He can't perform anymore. So he's on that medication. Why is it leaving my brain?
Viagra, yeah.
Viagra, thank you. Because after the shot, now he can't perform, so now he's on Viagra. And he's a younger man. He's not old. I mean, he's like middle age, maybe. I mean, I don't think that's old, but of course I'm middle aged now, so of course it's not old to me. But you know, this whole thing, I was a firm believer in the childhood vaccines, but now it's making me question because I've heard of the moms out there prior to COVID that talked about vaccine injured. And then I went to my physician and I asked questions, and he's like, oh, it's fine, these are safe. But then I have recently on my own gone to the FDA website where I could look at the packet insert. And in section 13, it says they have not been tested for fertility, mutagenics, or carcinogenics. None of them have been tested in all the childhood vaccines. I am a person that has suffered with infertility. And so it's something that's near and dear to my heart and something I don't want to cause for my children. So that has made me take a step back, especially after looking at that insert and realizing they don't know if these shots cause infertility issues because they didn't test for it. They don't know if it causes cancer because they haven't tested for it. And they don't know if it changes your genes because they haven't tested for it. And then I look at some of the ingredients like formaldehyde and mercury and fetal tissue cells, like from an aborted baby, probably. And these are not things I want to put in my body because we know that formaldehyde causes cancer. We know mercury is poison, and I don't want to inject that poison. And we know aluminum, studies have shown that it could possibly cause Alzheimer's down the road or cause neurological issues. And so now I'm taking a step back and saying, wow, things I didn't know because I trusted the FDA. I trusted these regulatory agencies to put something in my body that won't harm me. But yet, maybe those vaccines caused me to be infertile. And I know with the Gardasil, they saw a decrease in teen pregnancies by 50%. And that was alarming to a lot of people because they were wondering, does that cause infertility? Well, we do know that in Africa, there was a shot that was done. They called it the tetanus shot, and they put the HCG in there, and whatever that HCG thing mixed with the tetanus caused a lot of African women to be infertile. So it's not far-fetched out there to think that that could be a possibility in childhood vaccines. And because it's not tested, there's no way to know one way or the other. So has this made you want to dig in more to a childhood vaccine? I know that's not in your practice, but I'm just wondering, do you think there's even physicians out there that are now wondering more about what have we been encouraging for our children? Because now we have a lot of autism and we have a lot of neurological issues. So what about that? What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are just like you. They're starting to question the things that they always took for granted, and these are, you know, lay people and also physicians. I had already kind of gone down the vaccine rabbit hole, or the anti-vax rabbit hole before COVID, and I was already kind of like, you know, I was basically already aware of what has been going wrong in medicine for the last 50 years. And it's the same problem where when you force everyone to do something, you're not allowing science to continue to move forward and discover things that we don't know that we don't know. So, there was this one, people can read the books that have been written by people who object to childhood vaccines, and it's not entirely clear that these vaccines themselves have made any difference to, population health. The rates, it may be the case that, better, sanitation really explains the, explains like 99% of the drop in the death rates from infectious diseases in the last, 100, 150 years, and not vaccinations, right? Vaccinations came in at the very end of this tremendous, precipitous drop in death rates in the population that was all explained by sanitation, and the continued, and then the trend just continued after the vaccines were introduced. So we don't know, since we vaccinated everyone, whether that trend would have continued downwards, that downward trajectory, or if the vaccines contributed to the further downward trajectory, the last like 5% of that trajectory. So that's number one. Number two, I remember I came across a study once suggesting that if you had had four or more episodes of like childhood infections with things like measles, mumps, like chickenpox, rubella, those kind of infections that we vaccinated against, if you actually caught those infections, like if you hadn't been vaccinated, for example, if you caught them and made it through them, you had a 90% lower risk of heart disease in your old age, right? In your 70s, 80s, 90s. Okay. What does that mean, right? Why would that be the case? It's because the immune system helps you prevent heart attacks and cancer and everything. All chronic diseases depend on a healthy immune system. And if your immune system doesn't have the chance to do some push-ups and sit-ups when you're a baby or a child, right? By being exposed to some, illnesses, and if you don't get if you don't never get sick, your immune system never has a workout. It never, develops the way it needs to, you may actually be more prone to chronic diseases later on. So it kind of makes sense from like a physiological perspective, and like the theory, like there's a good theory there, and there should be a lot more research done. I mean, one study, I mean, it probably wasn't, super well done or whatever, but just the reason that they looked into it and they asked the question, was because of that theory in their mind. And the theory got some play in the modern world with like, this idea that, kids on farms are less likely to have things like asthma and allergies and stuff. But we never really went down that rabbit hole completely to see, well, maybe there's other things, maybe a lot of chronic illnesses are being, triggered by vaccinations because we're not allowing our immune system to develop properly. But the problem is, the really big overarching problem is, again, that marketplace of ideas. There's no free marketplace of ideas because there are questions that are off limits. Researchers can't ask these questions. If they ask the question, if they even ask the question and do the study and get the wrong result, then they will lose their career. And so that's not science, that's religion. Okay, that's religious dogma is what we're
That's right.
experiencing. And this is unfortunately human nature. We've seen this time and time again, throughout human history, where the people in control, the people in charge, just decide that, okay, now we're right and this is the way things need to be going forward. And every time that happens, they're always wrong. Okay, we're never done learning more about the world that we live in and the reality, right? Like there's this famous saying by a physicist back in like around 1900, that we've basically learned everything about physics at this point, right? This was Lord Kelvin, okay? He's like, basically we figured it all out. And this is like, 20 years before Einstein, And I mean, it's just every time humanity is, so boastful and thinks that they figured it all out, they have not, okay? And so we're always at that point. We always think we know better than, the people who are coming in the future. And unfortunately, we're always wrong. We always will be wrong. There's always more to understand and learn about the way the body works and the way health works and the way, and unless we give people this option, this is something that Paul Thomas, lost his license over in Oregon. He had
Oh,
a
yes.
big pediatrics practice,
Yes, he did.
and he published a study in a peer-reviewed journal comparing his unvaccinated kids to his vaccinated kids. I think he had something like 20,000 kids overall, something like that, 10, 20,000 kids in this giant pediatrics practice. And he showed that all the outcomes were better for the unvaccinated arm, And it wasn't like a randomized controlled trial or anything, but it was very suggestive and it should have led to questions being asked. But that was the wrong question to ask because just publishing the study, he lost his license, right? They went into like, emergency mode. We need to like pull him, call him in front of the medical board, get him to stop practicing. And I think later on they let him have like, let him re-enter practice, but with like limitations. Like he wasn't allowed to run any, do any research anymore on that question. Like literally, that was like a, a requirement of allowing him some limited practice. Again, was that he could not do any research on that topic. I mean, it's like we've been handed down this like as if like Moses went and got the Ten Commandments, and one of those commandments is that vaccines are, safe and effective for the population, right? It's not a commandment from God,
No,
it might be wrong. And so I think we do need to constantly, like, what is the scientific method? It's trying to disprove your beliefs. That is how science works.
that's
That's
right.
how you run an experiment. The way, like, if you remember back to like high school science class, the way you set up an experiment, a scientific experiment, is you have a hypothesis and you try to disprove it with a null hypothesis, right? That's how all science works. We're not allowed to do science anymore. What we're doing now is not scientific. We are, it's like scientism. It's a religion. It's no longer
It
science.
is. Thank you. I love how you put that. That is so true. It's like a religion. I didn't even think about it in that way, but you're absolutely right. I have so enjoyed talking to you, and I would love to have you back on the show. I think you're a brilliant man. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I knew I was going to really enjoy talking to you today. So how do people get in touch with you? Do you offer a telemed appointment, or like how, what is your practice like? Tell us a little bit about
Yeah,
that.
so people can find me at mygotodoc.com. That's mygotodoc.com. And I do some one-on-one visits, and then we have some asynchronous visits where you can kind of like get most things taken care of just with like a chat, consult. And so that's helpful for some people because it's a lot cheaper that way. And what we are working on for the future is I think we're in 15 states right now, but we're going to expand to all 50 states in the next month or so. And we're going to bring on some more providers, and we're going to offer people things like a virtual PCP if they want to, if they can't find a good PCP in their area, they can actually do 99% of things online and actually have like a PCP relationship with a provider online. Another recent thing that we've come out with is you can request a vaccine exemption. There's certain like criteria you have to meet, but you have to say certain things and tell a certain specific kind of story in order to qualify for one. But that is a service that's available for most of the US now at
I'm
this point.
real quick. I'm glad you touched on that because in my research with vaccines, there are several religions that the vaccines would really upset certain people, like because there's animal parts in these vaccines. And so if you can't have pork, I think there's some pork products. If you can't have beef, there's some beef products. There's human products in there. So there's a lot of religious things that are inside the vaccines that would really violate people's religious beliefs. So I'm glad you said something like that.
So just to be clear, like I'm a physician, so I'm not like a religious authority, so I can't give you a religious exemption, but I could, I could give people some pointers on how to do it. So there are some pitfalls that you have to try to avoid because they'll try to trip you up and trick you. They'll be like, well, you're saying that you don't, agree with the vaccines on these grounds, but like, do you use like ibuprofen or something? Like they'll come up with these drugs, these common over-the-counter drugs that have, that meet the same criteria. Like they've been studied on, human beings or animals or whatever, or they have an animal product in them or something. So you just got to be careful and do your research beforehand so that they, and if you do get tripped up, I mean, you can just be like, well, I didn't know. Now, thanks for telling me. I'm not going to use that product anymore. I didn't realize that that product also met the my religious criteria for avoidance. So yeah, I, unfortunately, a lot of religious exemptions are now being denied. But there are certain medical exemptions that people can get. There's like two of them, and only one that really works for all COVID vaccines, and that's that you're allergic to polyethylene glycol, which is essentially Miralax, which is a over-the-counter constipation remedy. So if you took Miralax, say you're constipated, you took some Miralax and you had a severe allergic reaction, right? Like you felt like you were going to pass out, you got like rash on your arm, like looks kind of like when you scratch your arm, and you couldn't breathe, and et cetera, et cetera. And maybe it wore off by the time you got to the ER or the urgent care or whatever, and then you felt fine. I mean, these reactions can be quite severe and they can wear off after 15 minutes. So no one may have seen it, right? But still, that story will get you a valid vaccine exemption that no one can argue with. And so unfortunately, people have to do things like that. They have to find an exemption that will work. I mean, I can write like a note saying I believe that this patient shouldn't get the vaccines because the vaccines are dangerous. That will not be acceptable, right? So
That's
people
so
get upset.
terrible.
They get upset with me. They're like, why can't you just write, what I want you to write? And I'm like, well, why can't you just tell me what I need you to tell me so that I can write what will actually work for you? So people need to understand that we're not living in a free world. We're not living in a free society. We are enslaved, okay, by the people in charge. And every year we become a little bit more and more enslaved. And what does that mean? Like, what is slavery? It's the loss of your choice, the ability to choose for yourself what affects you, the ability to choose what to say, and the ability to choose what gets done to you. When that gets restricted further and further, you become more and more enslaved. So we're headed back towards serfdom and slavery, unfortunately, unless we all decide to, stand up for ourselves and join forces, join hands. It's like the, one stick you can break it easily, a bundle of sticks you can't, no one can break it, no matter how strong they are. If we're the bundle of sticks in this country and in this world, then, these elite forces, whatever you want to call them, we'll have no way to stop us. And if we all stand up together and say that we demand certain things, kind of like what this country was founded on, right? We got to insist on those, what the founding fathers gave us, those gifts that they gave us. We got to insist on them.
I agree. Oh, you're so I this I really enjoyed speaking to you, doctor. I'm so glad I got to meet you. I hope my audience has got to meet you. I'll put a link to that website in the description so they can click on it and find you easier. I would love to have you back on. So anytime you want to be on my show, you are totally welcome to come back on. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for all your hard work.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
What if I told you that there was a beauty product that also helped block fat? Would you be interested? I know you would because it's something I'm interested in. The older I got, the more wrinkles that are showing up on the forehead, under the eyes. I got this Timeless box. It's amazing because the oil goes on after I clean up my face. The oil goes on and it helps with wrinkles. It helps with any kind of skin issues you might have. It's great for deterring insect bites. You gotta try it. It's amazing at that. And it's super easy. You just put it on your face and it just helps with any kind of skin issues you might have. Not only does the oil do that, but it also blocks fat. So put a dropper in your mouth right before you have a meal and you could be stopping fat right before the get-go. So if you want to lose weight and you want to have a beautiful looking face, or if you have skin, anything, a skin that you're just like, I don't like this, then get the Timeless Pack at thetimelesspack.com. Use my name, Amber May. Use promo code Amber May and save almost half off on the Timeless Pack. So that's thetimelesspack.com, promo code Amber May, and save some money for getting your wrinkles and fat loss.
It's because of a mutual friend of ours that I was actually connected with you. Michael, the artist, the commander's artist, he's a friend of yours and he's done some work for you. He's designed the logos on this show. And the commander's artist he's a great guy, isn't he? He speaks very highly of you.
Now, Michael is a terrific American patriot. And if anybody, I hope that you will promote his website and him. He does, the artwork that he does is very, very patriotic. And one of my sort of big, big things with Michael is Michael came into my life through this political persecution journey that my family and I went through. And he stepped up in a big way to help us raise some money for our legal defense. And Michael and I have become very good friends, and he's a terrific, faithful man, and I love him.
It was a pleasure.